Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Twanda Black. And, you know, I've been talking about this, I guess, since the Trump election or before, about how hateful our country has become. I'm like, where did it come from? I knew it was already there. But the permission to be hateful and mean and to kill people, it's just been unbelievable. And we have with us this morning a writer, activist, commentator, Sally Cohn, and she's written this book called The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Good morning to you, Sally.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. I think that when I say that, you know, I began, my eyes were open to how much hate it was, that I speak probably for most of Americans.
No, I think, you know, there's this paradox, right, where, like, let's not be naive. We, as a country, have a hateful history.
We do.
Right? I mean, our country was founded on wiping out Native communities and was built on slavery.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, entwined and ingrained in our country's history, in spite of our rhetorical aspirations and insistence otherwise.
Oh yeah, like Obama was elected. Oh, the age of hatred is gone. There's no more racism.
Right.
Really?
Right. Like boom, it was that easy. Like it was that easy.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I do think a lot of us had this, even who weren't naive about that, had this hope, this assumption that we were sort of inevitably progressing forward.
Yeah.
And always progressing forward. And that's simply not the case.
It's true. It's true. So let's start at the beginning. Racism, is it naturally born or is it taught?
So the metaphor someone gave me in the book, which I think is incredibly useful, is to think about hardware and software. So, because, like, look, I was desperate to find evidence that we are not hardwired to hate, and it turns out we're hardwired to hate. That, like, as human beings, the way we have evolved, you know, if you imagine us, like, thousands of years ago sitting banging our rocks together and, you know, some unknown tribe came over the hill, like, we feared them for probably legitimate reasons. Like, we should, you know, be on alert and guard our vegetables or whatever. Anyway, so that is, like, that has that wiring to prefer our own and fear the other, the unknown, right? That is actually how our brains are wired. That's the hardware. However, who we hate is completely taught to us by society. So there is not some part of our neuroanatomy that makes us racist or sexist or, you know, hate Republicans or hate Democrats. That is how we have been taught to apply that hardware. That's the software that's been encoded into each of us, which means it can change.
In one of the chapters, you talked about this thing called otherizing. And I thought that was so interesting because I witnessed and actually had my first piece of racism thrown at me when I went to college. And I went to an all-white college and got called the N-word for the first time. And I saw the otherizing. It was really interesting. When I read this, that whole image just popped up in my head. So talk about otherizing. That's so interesting.
Well, I want to hear more about your experience, but I'm sorry for it. I think we don't realize how much we treat we have a habit, both a history in the past and a habit in the present, of treating people, especially certain groups of people, as the other. And not just the other in some, you know, neutral way, but demeaning and dehumanizing other people, especially other groups of people, believing and treating them as inherently less than.
Right.
And that's really what racism and sexism and classism and Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, that's what they really are, right, is a belief that some people are inherently better than others, and a belief that we then enshrine in not only our personal habits and our unconscious, but in our policies and our institutions and our systems as a society. That's really the core of the what I think we need to address, understand in order to address.
Right. Now, in one of the chapters, you talk about hating is belonging and how, you know, no man is an island, that we all were made to belong and connect together. When you see people kind of on their own, there's something a little bit going on there. So you do this whole chapter about, seriously. I mean, you look at the kids.
I like
kids,
the way you said that. You're right, yeah.
You look at the kids who are locked up in their rooms, you know, making bombs and saying who they're going to shoot and making lists. And they actually do that. They are loners. So we're all made to belong. We're all made to commune together. But no man is an island. So you talk about this hating is belonging, the ex-white supremacist. Excellent chapter.
Thank you. Well, I think, you know, and there's research to suggest this. This is counterintuitive. To me, this was counterintuitive to what I believed, which is I thought that people go and become, you know, neo-Nazis and white supremacists, overt white power leaders, because they already have this extremist, hateful ideology, and they look for others who share it. And obviously that's true, and that happens to some extent. But what actually the research shows, and also this bears out in the anecdotes of the person who I talk about in the book, who's a former white supremacist, but what the research shows is that actually most people, whether it's neo-Nazi groups or even terrorist groups, hate organizations. They don't start with this strong adherence to the ideology, but rather they are looking for belonging. They find belonging through whatever set of messed up circumstances in these hate organizations, and then the language that the researchers use is that they slide into the ideology. And that we have to realize, I think, you know, a microcosm of this, obviously not the same thing, but we can recognize how all of us bond through hate. There's actually research that we form affinities more quickly based on hating things in common than liking things in common. And, you know, we all sit around and complain about the other political party or the other town or the other sports team or the other, right? And that habit of bonding through hate is something we need to start to notice and change.
You tell some phenomenal stories in here that, you know, it's just amazing. And that's how they recruit in gangs, because I've worked foster care. And some of the kids were recruited into gangs, but that's how they were recruited into gangs. They didn't have a family. Mom threw them away. Daddy wasn't around. And they started out by saying, hey, come on, little brother. You know, come be with me. We'll take care. It's the same thing. And I was reading that. I was like, wow, that is so true, how we all just want to be loved, you know?
Right. But then we assume that's I'm so glad you shared that. But then we assume that the folks in these groups and in these gangs are inherently bad, have always been bad, right?
Yeah.
Had this sort of evil tendency and sought out a group to reinforce and reflect that. And you know, I'm not like making excuses for the horrible things people do,
right?
Whether in gangs or in neo-Nazi groups, but recognizing that, you can't divorce white supremacy groups from the history of white supremacy in the United States.
It's not separate.
In all of us,
right, yeah.
And second, like, no one is disposable. No one is permanently evil. No one is permanently bad. As Bryan Stevenson said, no one is the worst thing they've ever done in life. So, you know, can we also understand that?
Yeah. Y'all got to get the book. It's phenomenal. We just had to take a few hours on bias, implicit and not implicit. It was so interesting. And then you do this chapter about unconscious hate, the Trump supporter, and how you went in feeling about all of that and some of the people. And you know, I had to say to one of my friends, because one of our friends who happens to be white, was going on about how she loves Trump. And so my friend was like, oh, I got to cut her loose. She's racist. I said, that's not what that means. That is not what that means. It's really not what that means. So talk about implicit bias. Does that mean that you're racist, or does that not mean you're racist?
Well, I think, you know, racist is a tough word. And there's a lot of people who will say they don't use it. There are a lot of people who say call a spade a spade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, I take the position in my life and in my book that I want people to be able to hear me. And there are certain words and certain ways of talking to each other that shut people down from listening.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I think there are, you know, overt, explicit racism is still an unfortunate reality and in fact, maybe once again rising in our country. And at the same time, I think most people do not want to be hateful, do not think of themselves as hateful, and at the same time need to understand how unconscious implicit bias, how our preferencing for certain people and our institutionalization of those preferences and privileges into policy, need to understand how that works so that they can do something about it.
Right.
And I don't think I'm a bit of a pragmatist in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think attacking people, making people feel blamed is often very constructive to then moving the conversation forward. And I think people can change and grow and learn. I've seen it happen. And so I want to give people that opportunity to become better.
Yeah, I love the story you tell about Glenn Beck. He was one of our syndicated shows here where I work. And you said he spent a life hate mongering and said all these things about President Obama. And then a few years later, he had to take them all back. And but, you know, you said you met him and you were not trying to be divisive about anything.
Well, also, like, what's, you know, to those who want to write off the Glenn Becks of the world or write off the Trump supporters of the world, then, you know, and I understand the impulse because these are folks who've done, you know, or supported very hateful things.
Yeah.
So I understand the impulse, believe me. My question is, what's the alternative?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are we going to leave them to be that for the rest of their lives? Would we rather Glenn Beck still be hate-mongering?
No.
Would we rather, you know, in the case of the example we were just talking about, would we rather Trump voters keep voting for Trump?
Mm.
You know, keep, right? Would we rather people keep stoking racial resentment? Like, I'm against that happening, so I'm going to do what I can to create the space for change.
That's right. I think that we all have to, you know, when you're in situations like that where there's some division and all the white kids are sitting together and all the black kids are sitting together, look for a solution to it. But what I'm so impressed about right now are our children. My children are 28 and 30. They date white girls. My son's in Australia. He has an Aussie girlfriend. The kids this age don't really care about the color, and they don't care about the history. Well, it depends on where how they're raised. But I'm just saying, in general, you see a lot of mixing of the races today. And I tell my kids, you love who you love. It does not matter. I'm never going to tell you, you better not bring anything home but a black girl. No, I can't do that. And but you see this generation of kids hanging out with their friends, and it's all different races and cultures, and I love that. And they're beginning to understand one another.
Yeah, I do too. I you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. I still see you know, that our elementary schools in this country are, you know, horrifically racially segregated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so most kids go to schools that are as segregated as ever.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I go both ways. And I think, look, we can be, just like I can see how as a country we're becoming and as a world we're becoming more gay friendly. And yet that doesn't mean that homophobia
exactly.
and even unconscious homophobia isn't still real.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, look, I think it's, but to me it's not ignoring the problem, it's acknowledging the problem, not getting stuck in
the problem,
but saying, okay, I didn't get us here. Yeah. What am I going to do to move forward?
Yeah, yeah.
How am I going to be part of the solution?
And how can we start today? Okay, we know what happened, and we know how we got here. We know the psychology. Some of us know the psychology of it. Some of us don't understand it. And some people are going to be racist until the day they die. They're going to raise their entire family, entire generations that way. But there are people out there who say, look, We're the human race. Why are we dividing each other according to color and culture and ethnicity and even sex? Why are we doing that?
Mm-hmm.
So let's join in with the human race and make this thing great. But again, like you said, there's both sides of it. And I so totally agree with you. But those of us who want a better world for our children, we need to get on the bandwagon.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I really think so. The book is absolutely awesome. You did some great research here. You guys are going to love the stories. Sally, tell folks where they can learn more about you and where they can get the book.
I got a website, SallyKohn, KOHN.com, and you can get the book, The Opposite of Hate, wherever books are sold.
Are you still on CNN?
I am indeed. I am. I'm still on CNN, trying to debate and discuss the issues, but do so in a way that tries to, bridge some of these divides in our country and move us forward together.
Yeah, not be hateful.
Yeah.
I
keep trying. I'm not perfect, but I keep trying.
It's so ugly on television. This is where our kids are seeing, and they're going, oh, my God. And then you're seeing kids in school being bullies. You wonder why. It's around them all day. When they turn on the television, whether it's their teachers or friends, even at church, they're having shootings in church. So it's a little crazy. Thank you so much for joining.
It is.
The book is called The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. SallyKohn is the author. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.